Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Whether in the East or West, U.S. unilateralism is an issue of which more countries are taking notice. From the G7 in Canada to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in China, nations are talking about Washington's inability to stick to its word and work with other countries. Well, I'd like to welcome our guests, but first of all, starting off, Press TV's correspondent, Stephen Ribe in Beijing. Stephen will fill us in on the results and overall about the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting.
Well, the final communique didn't contain a explicit mention of the Iranian nuclear deal, as was hoped. 6 years ago, the last time the summit was in Beijing, there was a big reference opposing American threats against Iran. That was very much in line with Iran's wishes. All of the members of the SCO came out in support of Iran in a strongly worded communique. The communique ending this summit did not contain such strong language. Instead, both Russia and China and Kazakhstan and the other Central Asian countries said they would continue to uphold the Iranian nuclear deal, although maybe not in as stronger terms as Iran would have liked.
And in general, because there was mentioning at one point by President Putin of Russia of possibility of wanting Iran actually to join the, officially become a member of the organization. Any information on that side of things? It seems that that suggestion was not okayed, at least it appears, perhaps by Beijing.
Well, both Russia and China have said that they want Iran to join the SCO. This was made clear after the Iranian nuclear deal. Iran said that if once this deal had been concluded, there were no obstacles to Iran becoming a full member. And then Xi Jinping, on his visit to Iran in January 2016, said the same thing. He gave his full endorsement of Iran as a full member. But you're right, there at this summit there was that wasn't taken forward.
Okay, all right, well thank you so much, Stephen Ribe, for that update out of Beijing. And now I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of London, political commentator Adam Gary, and out of New York, independent scholar Peter Sanna. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in New York. And Peter, do you think that the world's view of the United States is changing?
Well, I think right now a lot of the world is just waiting to see what happens between the summit with North Korea and Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. But the United States is obviously trying to change its role and its relationships with many states dramatically. It is trying to basically renegotiate what basically they want bilateral. So they're not focusing on larger units of organizations as much as other presidents. What you're seeing instead is an attempt to have more individual relationships between countries. And this has been the focus of Donald Trump quite clearly. It has its pluses, but it also has its negatives. The pluses are when perhaps it works to the United States' advantage in trade and some economic aspects and some political. But in the short term, it makes the United States seem to be very contrarian.
Okay, well, Adam, it appears that no country, not even the U.S.'s closest allies, can escape Washington's volatile behavior right now. Well, what do you think the U.S. president is trying to do? What do you think is the goal of this? Many say it's trying to, actually, the madman theory, as if he has no control and he's that one to be feared. But others say all of this is actually very, very calculated.
Well, Richard Nixon, who coined the madman theory, was many things, and Donald Trump is clearly no Richard Nixon. What we're seeing now is the phenomenon of competing globalisms, and as a kind of triumvirate to that, on the one side of the triangle, you've got a return to protectionism, as is being favored by Donald Trump. In China and among the partners that came together as part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, you're seeing a globalism that is focused around investment, around contributing to the development of countries, to actually engaging in bespoke relationships with countries, as opposed to applying the one-size-fits-all neoliberal format that has dominated many of the Western globalist institutions. Meanwhile, those in Europe and Canada are trying to cling on to the outdated form of globalism, and rather than embracing either, Trump has retreated into a distant past of failed protectionism. So for the wider world, it's very clear what's at stake. There's Asia, where the sun is rising, where more opportunities for cooperation are becoming ever more important. And we've got a fractious West. It really is the best of times and worst of times. All of Asia is coming together. All of the West is falling apart.
Well, how do you think this is going to affect the United States relations in general, even with its friends, Peter?
Well, I think its relationships with its friends are going to be more of a wait and see. I think that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is something that has promoted China's economy very well. If Iran was invited by both Russia and China a few years ago and has not joined, perhaps that's the reason. What we see is a tremendous investment by China in getting oil and gas from Central Asia to its borders, and we see a tremendous investment in building super rail lines that will bring Chinese goods to Western Europe. Other things such as the Belt and Road Initiative will bring in a little bit of Pakistan and other countries, but in the end, this is all very much serving China's economic and political interests and Russia's political interests.
So what's your perspective, staying with you, Peter, when you talk about the Shanghai cooperation and you say that it's all China, how do you see the future for this organization? You're saying it's all China, but of course Russia is part of it, India is part of it, and of course several of the smaller countries neighboring Russia. So why do you say that, and what do you see as its future? Because it seems, as our other guest was talking about, that basically things are shifting eastward.
Well, things are shifting in ways that aren't that beneficial to Central Asia, unfortunately. If we look at what sounds like so much success, the fact is that you have massive out-migration for labor from Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Turkmenistan has a miserable unemployment situation. So what we're really seeing is that Russia is taking on a lot of this surplus labor, so to speak, and we're not seeing investment in Central Asia that would allow them to bring back their labor force. So if this is such a great success, why is this problem of such massive unemployment throughout Central Asia? So that's my first criticism of why it hasn't been working. And it's been many years now. 17 years is a long period of time. So I really, when you think about it and you think of when it was founded, why is there no organization that's regional composed of Central Asian states alone? Why does there have to be a superpower, Russia, China? It's a control device. And if we really went back into China's internal Politburo decisions, we find in 1996 in resolution, I think number 9, they talked about bringing in many, many Chinese to settle in the Central Asian part of Western China, Xinjiang province. And they also outlined how they had to make good relations with the Central Asian states, but it seemed to me even then as a control device. So I really see it as a control device. It's serving China economically, and it's serving Russia politically.
Well, let's look at
and
the
by the way, Russian nationality.
Staying with you, Peter, what you're saying is when you talk about the Shanghai Cooperation Organization like that, I mean, when we look at, for example, the G7, and we're talking about, some of the strongest economies in the world, but it appears that there is a waning with this organization. I mean, you're talking about the Shanghai Cooperation, and of course, there stronger and weaker states. But we look at the schism that appears to be taking place in the G7 or the G6 plus one, many are saying. How do you think that that's going to affect, at the end of the day, that organization?
What I think it's been weakened for another reason. I think that what we have seen is that in especially the Eastern European countries, which are not part of this, we're seeing a dramatic shift in their politics to the right. And the countries are, you know, Slovenia, the countries are Poland, the countries are Hungary. And now you have a sense of almost political chaos in Italy. So all of these things serve to undercut it. At the same time, the Western Europe, the European allies of G7, feel many of the, if you talk to the people, the massive in-migration they've had as a result of the civil war in Syria, as a result of problems with the Afghanistan, is
overwhelming them.
All right,
so sorry to interrupt you. Let me get Adam back in on this discussion. Adam, we lost you for a couple of minutes. Tell me your take on the situation. So as our guest in New York was saying, he felt that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is very much monopolized and to benefit actually the Chinese and probably no one else. Your take on the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the future of it?
Well, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization covers 60% of the Earth's landmass. It is an organization which, after the United Nations, is the largest supranational body in the world. It is formulated on the win-win model, which stresses a respect where cultures will be able to pool their civilizational strengths through the power of diversity. It's an organization that stresses partnership rather than alliance. It's an organization that stresses bespoke situations as opposed to one-size-fits-all solutions, and it's a country that prioritizes investments over untenable political agreements. And this can be in the form of direct capital injection, it can be in the form of joint infrastructural projects, technology exchange, scientific exchange, educational and cultural exchange. The Chinese government just put nearly $5 billion aside to help harmonize trading relations throughout the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and its partners. And overall, China has invested $50 billion to harmonize trading relations, including in the building of logistics. This is the kind of globalism that the modern world needs. It's one that helps developing countries to achieve the kind of economic miracle that China has produced since the era of Deng Xiaoping in particular. And it's one that doesn't threaten countries if they don't have a similar political system to any other country. It's a system that doesn't require any sort of military alliance, and it's a country that puts its money where its mouth is. It delivers, and this is why the vast majority of the developing world is going with the Chinese style of globalism that we saw at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization rather than that chaotic circus that we saw in Canada.
So Adam, then what are you saying? Are you saying that actually SCC, this organization, or this type of model, is the way of the future? And do you see the G7 basically ebbing it was quite chaotic. Do you see that the better days for the G7 is over? Or tell me about that side of things.
Well, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization ought to expand, and indeed this meeting was the most important it's ever had. It was the first since India and Pakistan joined, and there's a possibility now that the organization can expand, not only in terms of its membership, but in terms of its scope, the things that it deals with. It was originally formed to try to solve various post-colonial border disputes across Eurasia, and it's developed into an organization that is actively pursuing peace through prosperity on this win-win model that President Xi of China talks so much about. It's a model that's brought success across the SCO, and frankly, the next step is to combine the multi-continental BRICS organization with the SCO in order to create the Shanghai Cooperation and Development Organization. That, I believe, would be a good short-term logical conclusion for the tremendous progress made today. As to what went on in Canada, it's a farce. No one in the world takes it seriously. You saw the only Asian leader there from a Western-leaning economy, Japan, just with gritted teeth at the utter chaos. You can't compare the two. You've got a mature organization making progress on the win-win model, and then you've got an absolute farce. It's like the Three Stooges. It should be called the S7, really, the Seven Stooges.
Well, okay. Well, Peter, what do you think about what our guests in London have said about the SCC being a win-win situation? This model is going to be the model of the future because, well, as he said, what we saw in Toronto was more or less a circus, especially this time around. Your take, though, Peter.
Well, if it's a model, it's a model of a future colonial resource extraction model. Now let's take Turkmenistan. Let's look at the massive investment. And yes, it was a massive investment in building a pipeline, gas pipeline, that would take gas from the fourth largest fields in the world to China. They built it. China paid for that. And then they get the gas in order to pay the bill for having them build the pipeline. There's very little money coming into Turkmenistan from the bill, from this project. So it's for Turkmenistan, it's a massive disaster. It has not led to money. And so they're putting their hopes on somehow moving things west where they could get some hard currency. So this model of build it and then when we say the debt is paid, you'll get money, hasn't worked.
And do you feel, staying with you, Peter, but do you feel that the...
Now, of course, go ahead.
Adam, you want to say something?
Yes. The gentleman opposite has clearly never been in business because the very model that he's discussing so pejoratively is how every business works. You develop a partnership, the partners build something for you, and you pay the loan off through services, through labor, through raw materials, through that which the company makes. It's the difference between a gross profit and a net profit. Once the gas project that the gentleman referred to is profitable in the sense of net as opposed to gross, then the money not only will be flowing in, but it will be flowing in rapidly. That's the nature of business. I should have thought any American supporter of capitalism would be applauding that.
Well, Peter, it does sound like you're...
I'm glad to...
Go ahead, Peter. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I'm glad he outlined it as a... because the fact is that by accepting this model, Turkmenistan has found itself in tremendous cash shortage. Now, it's not an ideal state. It's a totalitarian state. And maybe that was part of the appeal. It's the problem of these countries in Central Asia lacking real democracy. That is part of one of the reasons that the Chinese plan is so successful.
Well, Peter, let me just jump in right here. Peter, let me just jump in right here. You talk about these countries, let me jump in, just lacking democracy. Are you for more of a situation where it's very unilateral, that the United States basically dictates to the countries and do basically what it wants to do? Because it appears that more and more that is what is happening, at least coming from the West.
I doubt the United States would be capable of dictating. There's such diverse ideas and politics. I think when you look at something which is used as a model, you could say, what about Iraq? What about their elections? What about the debates on the street in places like Baghdad? Very different from the Saddam Hussein era. Perfect? Hardly. Real democracy? Barely. But this is, if there's a U.S. model, the model has not approached Central Asia.
Well, I'm sure many Iraqis would say what the hundreds of thousands of people have given their lives, sir, since the 2003 invasion by the United States. Adam, give you the last word on the situation in general. Where are we going? It seems very that there is a lack of stability, especially when we're looking at the United States and we look at its role that it wants to play internationally and the way it is playing ball. Where do you see all of this going?
Well, I'd like to end on a positive note. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Shanghai spirit around which it forms is all about making countries that have been lacking in development for centuries, have been exploited colonially for centuries, have been exploited through the Western financial markets for decades. It's about giving these countries a realistic, because we're talking about realism here, not some lotty-dotty democracy in the sky with diamonds. We're talking about giving these countries a realistic chance to elevate themselves out of poverty through win-win cooperation with other partners that will build sustainable growth throughout the decades and beyond. It's easy to throw money at problems. When the United States isn't throwing bombs at problems, they're throwing money at problems and only making more problems wherever either is thrown. The Chinese model is about sustainability in every sense of the word, and
all right.
It's why
I'm
it's winning, it's winning praise in Asia,
Adam,
all parts of Asia,
I'm not sure you can
in
hear
Latin
me
America,
you don't have your earpiece
in Africa.
So sorry, but I have to go, only a couple of minutes left to the end of the program, and I appreciate both of you being with us. Out of London, political commentator Adam Gary, and out of New York, independent scholar Peter Sanata. I appreciate both of you being with us. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and other group right here in Tehran. See you next time.